If y'all won't mind, if y'all got to go to the bathroom or get coffee or something. Because that is what kids want to know. And these are the basic questions that little folks want to know. Those are fun questions. This is a talk I really like to do because it's an interesting talk. This is, I love doing the resurrection because I think it's the most important one. I'll be honest. And that's why I did it tonight. And when somebody asked a question about, and many of y'all have heard me do this already. So I'm gonna kind of go through it fast. But the dinosaur thing is important and it's kind of fun. And it all deals with how do dinosaurs fit with the Bible? Did Noah take dinosaurs in the ark? How could those dinosaurs fit? And what happened to the dinosaurs? Those are the key questions. And that's what we're bombarded with right now. A lot of people want to know where the dinosaurs came from. I still have folks that say, Mike, I don't believe dinosaurs existed. Well, we know dinosaurs existed because we find what? Fossils. We find fossils of dinosaurs all over the earth, even at the tops of mountains. Out in Montana, Dr. John Horner, tremendous fossil find. He helped with the movie Jurassic Park, and he was featured in a little magazine that went with the book. So we find, and he found big dinosaurs, big four-wheeled varieties, the big guys. Big, gigantic dinosaurs. So we find fossils of dinosaurs all over the earth, even at the tops of mountains, everywhere. So we know that dinosaurs did exist. This is a fossil of a plesiosaur, which is not technically a dinosaur because it lived in water, but like the dinosaurs, it supposedly became extinct 70 million years ago. Dinosaurs existed. We find fossils. The question is, where did they come from? And that's kind of hard. The evolutionist isn't sure where they came from. Barry Cox makes this statement. Although many pages have been written discussing the mystery of the extinction of the dinosaurs, almost as much uncertainty surrounds their origin, our origin. And the reason why he says that is because there's two different types of dinosaurs. You have dinosaurs that have normal reptile pelvises, and we call those saurischian dinosaurs, but we also have dinosaurs that have bird-type hip bones. Reptile hip bones, bird hip bones. Well, how can you get a bird hip bone and a reptile hip bone and a dinosaur? Well, the evolutionists would like to say that one evolved from the other, and that should be the right answer. There's only one problem. Both of these types of dinosaurs appear together at the same time in the fossil record. And that's what Barry Cox makes the statement of. Possible evolutionary links between these two dinosaurs obstinately refuse to appear. Still a mystery as to where the dinosaurs came from. You and I know where the dinosaurs came from. Why? Because that's an historical event. We have someone who is always there, who knows everything, and who cannot lie. And he says, I saw the very first dinosaur because I created him. The dinosaurs I created on day in the water, I created on day 5. Dinosaurs like Tyrannosaurus Rex that lived on land, I created on day 6. God knows everything. And whenever scientists tell you about things that happened millions and billions of years ago, what's the first question y'all should ask? Y'all ought to know this now. Were you there? No one saw those dinosaurs evolve. God saw the dinosaurs created. And God says that he made them. He was there to see the first one. This is how they occurred. Let me say this. A lot of opposition. People said, Gerard, you mean God made Tyrannosaurus Rex with Adam? I said, well, sure. He said, that's impossible. I said, why? Tyrannosaurus Rex would have eaten Adam, Dr. Gerard. You know the question I always ask those kids? Were you there? Did you see Tyrannosaurus Rex eat anything? And he answers, no. But who has always been there? Who knows everything? God. And God says that he saw the first dinosaur and the first critter eat. God says that before the fall, there was no death. And he says in Genesis 1:30, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, to everything that creeps in the earth in which there is life, I have given them every green herb for food. God says the dinosaurs and man and all the critters ate plants and vegetation before the flood. Well, wait a minute, Doctor. What about those big, long, sharp teeth on Tyrannosaurus Rex? Well, wait a minute. What about the big, long, sharp teeth on a panda bear? Panda bears have big, long, sharp teeth. They eat bamboo. Fruit bats from Australia and New Zealand have big, long, sharp teeth, and they eat fruit. You know what big, long, sharp teeth mean? Big, long, sharp teeth. That's all. So even if you have big, long, sharp teeth, it doesn't mean that you have to eat meat. I was looking at a hippopotamus yesterday, one that was just born at the zoo. It's got big, long, sharp teeth. I was shocked. Thing was eating plants. He needs to talk to a scientist and get it straight. Let me tell you some evidence about this. Now, whenever we start with the word of someone who knows everything, who's always been there, who's seen everything, whenever we start with God's word, who's a perfect eyewitness, and we go out and we look for the evidence, you know what we find? The evidence fits with what he says. If you look at the teeth on a Tyrannosaurus Rex, yes, they're big, long, sharp teeth, but the socket in the jaw is very thin, very shallow. And if Tyrannosaurus Rex had bitten into an animal, he'd have pulled all his teeth out. Then he'd have to gum animals to death, and no one believes that. The other thing is that we found Tyrannosaurus Rex skeletons with sugarcane fossilized between the teeth. Tyrannosaurus Rex had great teeth for stripping bark, just like you see bears do with their big, long, sharp teeth. In fact, bears would be strict vegetarians if they could get vegetables all year long. Okay. Dinosaurs. Remember now, no death before Adam. That really kills the gap theory, y'all. Let's just talk about that for just a second. There was no death before Adam. If the fossil record is a record of things that died before Adam, we got problems not with the Old Testament. We got problems with the New Testament. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin. So death passed upon all men for that all of sin. Death comes because of man. 1 Corinthians 15:21-22, since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. As in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. If the first half of this verse succumbs to the gap theory, if man didn't bring all the death into the world, then the second half of this verse can't be true either, huh? And if the first verse is false, that's one thing. If the second verse is false, the resurrection of the dead, that's the gospel. And if Paul said, your faith is in vain, we're in trouble. That's where the gap theory... It's not that the gap theory hurts the Old Testament or hurts the dating methods. It's that the gap theory destroys the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because it clearly says, as in Adam all die. Okay, back to dinosaurs. What happened to the dinosaurs? You can't go to the zoo now and see a dinosaur. We know that they existed. We find fossils. But what happened to the dinosaurs? And the key to figuring out what happened to the dinosaurs lies in that fossil. We know that dinosaurs existed because we find fossils. We find fossils of dinosaurs all over the earth, even at the tops of mountains. How do you form a fossil? When I was in school, I was taught that you form a fossil when you bury critters very slowly with mud and water over thousands of millions of years. Now, how much sense does that make? Not at all. If you bury a critter very slowly over thousands of millions of years, you don't form a fossil, do you? What happens? He rots. Get a dead cat, put it in front of your yard, leave it there for 6 months. It'll rot. It won't form a fossil. So in order to form a fossil, you have to bury critters with mud and water. How? Quickly. We find fossils all over the earth. Those are the remains of critters that were buried with mud and water very, very quickly. Tremendous numbers of fossils that were buried very quickly with mud and water. Does the Bible speak about any event that would have buried creatures very suddenly all over the earth with mud and water? Sure. The flood. The flood is the best explanation for what happened to those creatures. When we look at fossils, we're seeing most of the fossils, maybe not some of the younger, the ones at the top, but nearly all the fossils are the remains of critters that were trapped in Noah's flood. They were buried. The Bible says the fountains of the great deep burst forth. Hot mud, water, volcanic activity that very, very quickly buried the critters around them. That's why when we do find fossils, we don't find one or two. We find fossil graveyards. As I said this morning, Dr. Robert Broom says that the Great Karoo Formation in Africa, he's got 800 billion vertebrates there. That's an incredible number of fossils. It's in Africa. I want to say in South Africa, the Great Karoo Formation. Dwayne Gish refers to it in his book, Evolution Challenge of the Fossil Record. Let me just show you this as an example. This is a fossil of a perch fossilized in the act of swallowing a herring. Rapid burial. Rapid burial. You form fossils when you bury critters rapidly. Yes, sir.
Job is after the flood.
So
what did he see in the Jordan flood state?
I'm going to get to that. Hang on to that question. That's a great question. And that's just about where we are. Let me just do this, too. A lot of people, my next-door neighbor used to be a geologist, paleontologist, and he'd always say, Mike, what's your evidence for Noah's flood? I said, well, Walt, what evidence would you expect to find? He said, well, if there was a worldwide flood that covered everything, you'd expect to find billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. I said, Walt, you're a paleontologist. When you go out there, what do you find? He said, you find billions of dead things buried. Wait a minute. He said, the evidence fits. I said, good, very good. You see, when you start the word with the word of someone who knows everything, who's always been there, who's seen everything, and then you go out and look for the evidence, guess what you find? You find that the evidence fits. The best evidence for Noah's flood. Billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. As we pointed out earlier today, the Himalayas, the highest mountains in the world, Mount Everest, guess what you find at the top of Mount Everest? Marine fossils, yeah. Things that lived in water. In fact, the whole Himalayan plateau is sedimentary rock. Rock that was laid down by water. That's incredible, isn't it? Just like God said. God's smart. God knows a lot. Question. Did Noah bring dinosaurs in the ark? And if he did bring dinosaurs in the ark, how could they fit? How did he fit those big dinosaurs? And the answer, of course, is he didn't bring the big dinosaurs in the ark, did he? He brought the baby dinosaurs. He brought the little dinosaurs in the ark. That's how they fit. The answer is certainly he did bring dinosaurs in the ark. How do we know that? Because God told Noah to bring two of what kind of animal? Two of every land-dwelling, air-breathing animal. He didn't have to bring fish. Maybe he didn't even bring insects. But the land-dwelling, air-breathing animals had to go on that ark. And so they did. Which means that if dinosaurs went on the ark, Who came off the ark? Dinosaurs. Yeah. Where are they? We need an eyewitness, don't we? Historical events. God one day is talking with his friend Job. He says, Job, I want you to look at that critter over there. He says, behold, behemoth thou, which I made with thee. He eats grass like an ox. He moves his tail like a cedar tree. Now, what's got a tail like a cedar tree? There's a real good Bible commentary that says that this is an elephant. That's the wrong end of the elephant. Elephants don't have a tail like a cedar tree. What critter has a tail like a cedar tree? Dinosaur. Brontosaurus type of dinosaur. The African natives in the middle of the Congo have been talking since the early 1920s and 30s when the white man first made contact with them about an animal called Makembla Mbembe. And they could never understand what these natives were talking about. Makembla Mbembe, what does he look like? And they would show them pictures of elephants? No. Pictures of hippopotamus? No. Finally, somebody showed him a picture of a brontosaur. A brontosaur type dinosaur. And he said, yeah, that's it. That's exactly what it is. In 1980, Dr. Roy Macklin and an expedition team went to the middle of the Congo, were able to sit out in the lake. They lost a lot of their photographic equipment, the flash flood, and lost several people in their party. But they were able to sit out in that lake, and sure enough, early in the morning, this thing came up out the water, much bigger than this. Macklin said that it is so big that you have absolutely no chance of ever capturing a live one. No chance at all. And with that in mind, the natives have been very uncooperative in helping Mackle to go back and get a critter. Because this thing's got a disposition. It's like a teenager. Got a little temper on it, okay? And they're afraid that they're going to go over there, aggravate this creature. Mackle and his team goes home, and they got an angry bunch of these things over there. So, you know what? If I lived over there, I'd tell Mackle, hey, go fish. They have not been able to get back there, but Mackle swears that it's there, and the natives swear that it's there. Voice print of the creature. They couldn't get a picture, but they did get a voice print. And the voice print of the creature, which is like a fingerprint, is different than any other creature. So, we've got some eyewitness evidence. Better than eyewitness evidence, worth at least 1,000 words, is a picture. 1977, off the coast of New Zealand, a Japanese fishing boat pulled up this critter. No dorsal fin. It's not a fish. It's got gigantic flippers. Not a shark. Tissue and blood samples said that it was more closely related to a reptile or a fish. And the Japanese that investigated it, and the American scientist that was over there that saw it, said that this thing is definitely this. Plesiosaur. But it was supposed to be extinct 70 million years ago. Not. And most of us think that's what the Loch Ness Monster is. Now this thing, when the Japanese fishing boat pulled it up, it had been dead for a couple of weeks. It smelled bad. So they didn't keep it on board. They threw it back in. But goodness gracious, if they had kept it, it would have been amazing. Would it have overturned the whole theory of evolution? No. You've got the footprints in Biloxi. Discover Magazine went there in, I want to say, 1990, after Dr. Patton and Ball had showed conclusively that the footprints weren't faked, weren't caught, had done all the sectioning and everything else. Discover Magazine went over there, 90 or 91, I can't remember exactly when it was. They shot almost 8 hours of video, and when they showed it on TV, they edited all of the stuff out that would have proved that they were true footprints. If you can't beat the evidence, you win by censorship. And even those guys are saying it now. Remember the quote I read you this morning from Jeffrey Burbidge about the astronomers and about how Houghton Orth continues to find evidence that contradicts the Big Bang? So they just told him, you can't play with our telescope anymore, Houghton. And he doesn't have several million dollars to go buy his own. So he's out of luck. Best way to shut him up is censorship. Noah's Ark. How could you fit all those billions of animals in that little bitty boat? How could you collect them all? Big question that's asked. In fact, I would have to say that this is one of the major challenges to the flood. How could all of those animals fit in that boat? Y'all, this is one of those times to ask the right question. Number one, whenever anybody asks me that, I always ask them, how big was the boat? And you know what most people say? I don't know. And so I ask them, well, how many animals did he have to fit? I'm really not sure. I said, take two of every kind, how many animals would have? Oh, gee, I don't know. They didn't know. These are the two right questions to ask. And I always tell them when they tell me that, how can you fit an unknown number of animals in an unknown size boat? That's impossible. You got to have some fill in the blanks there. Noah's Ark was big. Noah's Ark was 437 feet long. It was 73 feet wide. It was 44 feet high. It had three decks, but here's the important number. It could have held 125,000 sheep-sized animals. Dr. Mars and Dr. Whitcomb said that to take two of every kind of creature, which probably goes down to the level of family in taxonomy, to take two of every kind of creature even accounting for the extinct species, you would have only had to have taken between 35,000 and 50,000 individual animals on board the ark. Some people have downsized that figure to less than 10,000, more in the range of 5,000. So even with the biggest number, 50,000 creatures, you would have still, and most of those creatures averaged less than a sheep, the size of a sheep, you would have only taken up about a third of the ark. Lots of room for food, lots of room for other folks if they had wanted to come in. And the reason why you wouldn't have had to have taken so many critters is because you didn't have to take two of every dog. You only had to take two of every kind of dog. If you took two mongrel dogs, and this has already been experimentally demonstrated before the turn of the century, if you took two mongrel dogs, you would not only get every variety of dog when they got off the ark and started to breed again, but you would have also gotten all the foxes, all the wolves, all the dingoes, all the types of creatures in the dog kind, in the family candidate. All of that would have been reproduced. And the reference for that is in the minds of men. Let's see. Oh, good question. Who took care of all, who fed all the animals? That's a good question, but the real question, who cleaned up after 50,000 animals? You only got 8 people on that boat. Well, I'm not glad I wasn't there. So the question is who did it? Now, we don't know that this is a fact, but what we think happened is that the creatures hibernated during the flood. Every single creature has a latent tendency to hibernate. My wife and I today after lunch, we hibernated for a couple of hours. Sunday ritual. So every creature hibernates. During the flood, the weather would have cooled off probably. You would have had a lot of rain. And with that happening, we know that bears can hibernate for up to 9 months and no harm whatsoever to their system. So you wouldn't have had to have fed them every day. Was the flood a local flood? No. How do I know? Because God doesn't lie. Remember what God said after the flood? He said, I will never, ever do this again. And to prove my point, I'm going to put a rainbow in the sky as a sign. If that was a local flood that had just hit Noah, God lied this year right in this area. About 5 weeks ago, right? Because he sent a bunch of local floods. But you know what God's never sent yet? He never sent a worldwide flood. It was a real live worldwide flood. And how did the kangaroos get to Australia before the flood? Probably before the flood, there was just one big landmass. This whole idea of tectonic plate movement and the different continents at one time being together. You know who started that idea? Christian German geologist in 1859. And you know where he got the idea from? The evidence was there, but the first place he got the idea from was from the scripture. He said, gee, if you read Genesis, it appears that there's just one big landmass. And so then he went out and he looked for the evidence, and he said, gee, you know what the evidence looks like? There's one big landmass. And that theory would have been really big, the fact that all the continents were together at one time and then split apart, except for another book that was written and published in 1859 called The Origin of the Species by Charles Darwin. So it's depressing. So another Christian geologist in the 1920s resurrected the theory. And finally, in the 1970s, the secular geologists caught hold of it, and that's what they're clinging to now, this idea of plate tectonic movement. But that started with us guys, just like the idea of natural selection started with Christian creationists. How did the kangaroos get to Australia after the flood? They hopped. That was easy. One of the big questions people always want, where do different races come from? The Bible doesn't talk about races. The Bible talks about nations, languages, and tongues. And that's exactly what we see. When we talk about races, we talk about different color skins. The thing that determines the color of your skin is how much melanin your skin produces. And there are 4 genes that determine how much melanin you produce. Depending upon the genetic combination, you'll get any combination of genes. And if Noah's if Noah's sons and daughter-in-laws had the maximum genetic variety in their skin, then their grandkids could have ranged from the darkest dark, like you find in India, to the lightest light, like you find in Scandinavia, and everything in between. Now, how do you get dark-skinned people just in Africa and Australia and India? How do you get light-skinned people in Scandinavia? How do you get yellow-skinned people in the Far East and red-skinned people over here? How do you isolate those people into certain geographic areas and keep them producing the same color-skinned people or people with the same genetic characteristics? You do that the same way you do with any other creature. You have them marry and breed with people who have identical or very similar characteristics. So you isolate them. If you were raising rabbits and you wanted to get all white rabbits, you wouldn't breed a brown rabbit with a white rabbit, would you? You'd breed a white rabbit with a white rabbit. And it's the same thing with people. If you want just dark-skinned people, if they're going to marry a dark-skinned person and have children with that dark-skinned person, they'll produce dark-skinned kids. Much, much better chance genetically. How do you isolate people and separate them then? That's all we have to do. How do we do it now? languages, sure. And God said that that's exactly what he did at the Tower of Babel. He isolated and separated people. The people that had an extra gene that allowed for more dissolved fat in their skin and a little fat layer in their eye, they went east. The people that had dark skin went south into Africa and east into Australia and into India. It's just a simple matter of genetics. In fact, more and more now philologists are telling us that if you look at all the different languages, it does appear that every language came from an original language right around the area of Iran, Iraq. That all languages seem to originate from the Middle East, from the proto-language. Just like God said. There's a big article in Smithsonian Magazine about 5 years ago with this. And I'll end with this one last thing. What about all those layers of rock? Could that have formed rapidly? Things like the Grand Canyon, where we see almost a mile of rock layers. Could those layers of rock form rapidly? Could we have carved out this canyon rapidly, or did it take millions of years? We know the Grand Canyon wasn't caused by the Colorado River. There's too many problems with that theory, and even the evolutionists will admit it. But how would you form a canyon this big? Well, we saw that exact same thing happen. That's Mount St. Helens before, and Mount St. Helens during, and look at Mount St. Helens after. Less than a year after, the Toodle River that had been dammed up, the dam broke, the water came rushing out and carved in solid rock in one day a canyon identical to the Grand Canyon, except 1/40th the scale. So the Grand Canyon might have been caused by what? A big flood. Grand Canyon, we see layers of rock. At Mount St. Helens, we see layers of rock. See a little bitty river down there? That little river didn't cause this. Some of these layers of rock in some areas are up to 9 feet thick as far as the individual lamina, and in some areas, they're over 600 feet high where these layers pile up. This layer, see all these different layers? That was formed by molten mud traveling at 90 miles an hour. And the geologist that's done most of the work over there is a geologist at ICR, Institute for Creation Research, Dr. Steve Austin, one of the most brilliant men I know. He said, Mike, before I saw Mount St. Helens, he said, I would not have believed that you could have gotten those layers of rock, especially moving 90 miles an hour, to form out like that in a day, in a matter of hours. The other problem with all these layers of rock being very, very old age is the fact that in those layers of rock, we never find meteorites. If it took over a million meteorites hit the Earth's surface every year, if all those layers of rock were laid down over hundreds of millions of years, we ought to find meteorites mammy in there, bunches and bunches. But we never find meteorites except below these very top layers. Conclusion. The real issue is epistemology. How do you know what you know? How do they know what they know? And the bottom line, especially when you're talking to someone that knows a lot more science than you, don't talk about the science with them. Get Josh McDowell's book. Everybody ought to have a copy of this book. This ought to be everyone's library, along with his book, The Resurrection Factor. You ought to be able to take that book, The Resurrection Factor, make your outline. I'm going to send Chet a copy of all my transparencies, use my outline, and you ought to be able to rattle those things off to where people will say, well, didn't Jesus just swoon? You can say, well, gee, that's an interesting theory, but, and give them that evidence. All of y'all can't become experts in nuclear physics or radiometric dating, but everyone can be an expert on the evidence of the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ, and that is the bottom line. Yes, I'm embarrassed I didn't. There are some tremendous videos, the Understanding Genesis series and the Back to Genesis series that are in the library here. Check those videos out, sit down, watch them, and make notes. They are excellent. You're going to find a very handsome doctor from New Orleans on one of the videos even. Now, y'all have an accent, but he doesn't. But please check those videos out. Those videos are absolutely tremendous. They are really good. Strongly recommend that you do that. And study, really, arm yourself with some of this information. I'm tired of people saying, oh, Christians are just so uninformed. I love it when I ask somebody, well, let me ask you this. What do you think about helium retention in Precambrian zircon? And they look at you like you're nuts, and you say, oh, did you miss that article? Well, it pretty well documents the young Earth. You don't really know as much as you thought you did, do you? And it sounds ugly, but sometimes that you need to do that to kind of rattle people. And do it in love. I always tease folks about it. No, not always, but I always try to tease folks about it. And like I say, the reason why I do it, and the reason why I do stress is because I love those folks. If you have any more questions, my wife's already mad at me. You're not keeping me. She's not. Thank you all. Appreciate you for having us.
This is the end of this message and the series.